Blog Talk Radio.
Coming to you from the Blog Talk Radio studio, right in the Uribe compound, this is Politically Direct, and I am the professor, Fernando Uribe. I want to welcome you all here on the 30th of July, and of course, I want to thank you all for listening from wherever and however you may be doing so, and of course, Politically Direct is brought to you by Insider NJ. Now, you can write to the show's inbox at any time, ladies and gentlemen, by writing to politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. If you have a suggestion or a topic that you want me to discuss, or an issue, or maybe a guest that you haven't heard from in quite some time, write to me. I'd love to hear from you, and I'll certainly do my best to get him or her on the program as soon as I possibly, you know, is available. So write to the show again, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Now, don't forget to follow the show on Instagram, at Politically Direct NJ. You can also check me out on my own Instagram as well, at Professor Fernando Uribe. Certainly tons of new likes and followers, and plenty of new likes based on not just only my regular posts, but my Instagram stories. So I know that many of you enjoy them, whether it's about politics, sports, political, pop culture, politics, anything else. I know you definitely tune in for them, so I appreciate the love and support you give me on Instagram. Also, hit me up on Twitter, folks, at Professor F. Uribe. For all of you Facebook subscribers, please go to the official page for Politically Direct. Like it, of course, and tell your friends to do the same. And, of course, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget that Politically Direct is brought to you by Insider NJ. And you can check out Insider NJ by going to their website, www.insidernj.com, for the absolute best coverage of the political scene. Nobody does it better, ladies and gentlemen, than Insider NJ. And, of course, once you go on the website, on the upper right-hand corner, you will see the subscribe button. Click on that, and you'll be automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So whether it is the editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, with his sensational columns, or the other teammates that I have here at Insider NJ, whether it's Jay Lasseter, Alan Steinberg, even though he drives me crazy, and Fred Snowflake, you know what? They're all great writers, and you definitely want to check out their columns on a daily basis. So definitely check it out at www.insidernj.com. Certainly, when you can, make sure you like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. Now, the opinions and views expressed tonight and every week here on Politically Direct are mine and mine alone. And they do not represent those of Insider NJ, the management, the staff, or our advertisers. And without question, ladies and gentlemen, I can't say enough about really the outstanding job that everybody does at Insider NJ, because, you know, really, you know, when we think about the you know, journalism is a hard business. There's no question about that. And when we talk about what goes into, you know, putting together a very reputable news source, it speaks volumes about the ability of people to, you know, put together columns in such a quick turnaround, you know, time. And, of course, to break news like we do. And really nobody does it better than Insider NJ. So definitely, folks, again, www.insidernj.com. And it got me thinking, folks, again, we have a great guest coming up here today. And before I get to him, it got me thinking about how pissed off I am as a Rutgers alumnus, because yet again, another Rutgers professor is kissing up to the social justice clowns. And that is the subject of my first shot. Now, I've always talked about it on this show, ladies and gentlemen. Now, you can always depend on the social justice clowns and the woke fools in today's political climate to continue making asses of themselves. And of course, you know, it makes you wonder, can these jokers ever take a day off? Well, apparently the English department at Rutgers University in New Brunswick recently announced a list of, quote, anti-racist directives and initiatives for the upcoming fall and spring semesters, including an effort to de-emphasize traditional grammar rules. That's right, folks, to de-emphasize traditional grammar rules. Now, the initiatives were spelled out by Rebecca Walkowitz, the chair of the English department at Rutgers University. And subsequently, the initiatives were sent out to faculty, staff, and students in an email, a copy of which was obtained by various news sources, which include NJ.com, certainly Insider NJ, and the College Fix. Now, Professor Walkowitz sent the email on Juneteenth, which, if you're not aware, celebrates the commemoration of emancipation from slavery in the United States. Now, the email was titled Department Actions in Solidarity with Black Lives Matter. Now, the email that states that the ongoing and future initiatives that the English department has planned are a, quote, way to contribute to the eradication of systemic inequities facing Black, Indigenous, and people of color. One of the initiatives is described as, quote, incorporating critical grammar into our pedagogy. Now, it listed as one of the efforts for the Rutgers, for example, graduate writing program, which serves graduate students across Rutgers, the Rutgers community. The GWP's mission is to support graduate students of all disciplines in their effort and future writing goals, from coursework, papers, to scholarly articles, and ultimately dissertations. That's, of course, stated on their website. But under a so-called critical grammar pedagogy, quote, this approach challenges the familiar dogma that writing instruction should limit emphasis on grammar / sentence level issues, such that not students from multilingual, non-standard academic English backgrounds at a disadvantage, the email states. Quote, instead, it encourages students to develop a critical awareness of the variety of choices available to them with regard to micro-level issues in order to empower them and to equip them to push against biases based on written accents. Certainly, Walkowitz's comments comes amid racial unrest that still exists within academia following the death of George Floyd at the hands of a white police officer in Minneapolis. Now, Walkowitz explained in the email that since 2012, the Rutgers English Department has had a committee on bias awareness and prevention. Jesus Christ. I mean, really, the English department? But of course, folks, that's what you can expect in academia, a lot of this bleeding heart nonsense, but, you know, it gets better. Following the committee's most recent meeting in mid-June, its members agreed it needs to, quote, move from a role emphasizing awareness and prevention towards a role emphasizing culture change. Several initiatives came out of that meeting, she wrote. For example, a recommendation endorsed by leaders of all instructional units is to require that all fall 2020 instructors in English to attend at least one workshop remotely on, quote, how to have an anti-racist classroom. Oh, for the love of God, really? I mean, it gets better, folks. Now, the committee will also be launching a webpage to provide access to events, resources, and affiliated groups, while also organizing two teachings focused on Black Lives Matter, anti-racism, police brutality, and police reform. Folks, what this has to do with the English department and trying to encourage students to write properly when it comes to grammar is beyond me. But this is, again, what makes academia so convoluted. And I work in academia, so let me just preface it by saying that, you know, it often drives me crazy when I have to listen to my colleagues in academia and in higher education with some of these, like, bleeding heart liberal causes that just drive you crazy. Listen, if there's anything that we need to do, folks, is to encourage proper grammar. And the idea that Professor Walkowitz feels that, you know what, we shouldn't emphasize proper grammar anymore because it's somehow seen as solidarity with Black Lives Matter or indigenous groups. You know what? You're insulting people of color by saying, hey, you know what? Writing isn't important, and you probably can't write correctly. So guess what? We're just going to loosen the standards and regulations of proper English here at Rutgers University. I mean, folks, if that's not even racist on itself, I don't know what is. But it's a bad job by Rutgers allowing this. And, you know, again, probably Professor Wachowicz is one of these tenured professors that, you know, can come up with this nonsensical liberal stupidity. And now they're going to force it on the curriculum. So starting this fall, the importance of grammar is no longer going to be emphasized by the Rutgers University English Department. And I'll tell you right now, if that just doesn't, you know, remind you of how stupid and asinine academia can be, just add one more to the list, because this is something that, you know, every parent should be freaking out right now thinking about sending their kids to Rutgers. And you know what? When they walk out of there, you would think that they would be better writers than when they walked in, right? But it's clearly that's not going to be the case, because apparently it's not important to Rutgers University. Who would have thought? And it's a sad state of affairs for the state university folks, because, you know, I'm someone who's a proud alumnus. I earned my two undergraduate degrees in New Brunswick, and I earned my three graduate degrees at Newark at the graduate school. But, you know, it's a really sad state of affairs at Rutgers University, folks, when they're encouraging this sort of stupidity. But you know what? Does it surprise you when it comes to liberals in today's political and social climate? It really shouldn't. Something I've been highlighting on this program forever. And there's just one more thing to laugh at when it comes to liberals today's political and social climate. And that is my first shot right here on Politically Direct. All right, folks, great show for you here on Blog Talk Radio, again, brought to you by Insider NJ. It's my pleasure to welcome to the program today a good friend of the show, and he's a columnist who I highly respect. He's a teammate at Insider NJ. He's a guy who I can read, whose writing is exceptional. He doesn't drive me crazy like some of my teammates, like Alan Steinberg, who sometimes makes me want to, like, just, I don't know, scratch my head and ask myself if I'm on Earth when I read some of his columns. But I never feel that way with my guest today. The great Fred Snowflag joins us on Politically Direct. Fred, what's going on, brother?
Well, first thing I want to say is that when I write my columns, I always make sure I use proper grammar.
Absolutely, thank God. Yes, and you do.
What's going on at Rutgers? I did not hear that bit of news.
Yes, well, it was discussed this week. It was a memo that was leaked out to NJ.com and the College Fix that apparently starting in the fall, the English department at Rutgers in New Brunswick feels that emphasizing proper grammar is no longer a priority for the English department. Now, I'm dead serious. This is not like some right-wing conspiracy. This is not like some right-wing hyperbole. There was an email sent out to faculty members and other members of the English department that proper English is seen as sort of a detriment to people that, for example, are indigenous or that are of different writing accents. And why put them through that disadvantage? So, you know, when you think that college students, when they walk in, they may not be the best writers, you would hope that they walk out better writers, especially at a school like Rutgers. And I'm biased because I'm an alumni. But Fred, the idea that they're not going to be pushing proper grammar anymore because they feel that that will be in solidarity and showing support for Black Lives Matter, it just sounds asinine to me. It's like apples and oranges. One has nothing to do with the other. But again, that's academia. That's, you know, liberals that encompass academia come up with this nonsense. And it's just crazy. It's a shame that more mainstream media outlets haven't talked about this, whether it's like NJ.com or, you know, the Star Ledger. It's a shame it's going under the radar. It really is shameful.
Well, you know, believe it or not, I've actually heard this theory a few years ago. I mean, the same thinking, I guess. I don't know what the thinking is, but I mean, I guess the thinking is that somehow proper grammar is what? It's too establishment-oriented or something? I've heard this thinking.
It's really alarming. It's a shame because, you know, Rutgers, again, whether the threat by organizations on campus to tear down the statue of Henry Rutgers and rename Rutgers, right? There was that conflict about a month ago, which I talked about on my studio show. And, you know, kudos to the new university president for not caving to these social justice clowns that want to rename Rutgers because it was discovered that Henry Rutgers was at one time a slave owner. I mean, Jesus Christ, Fred, I mean, listen, I'm not trying to sound sensitive here, but for the love of God, you know, for anyone that knows about Rutgers University and knows about Henry Rutgers, Colonel Henry Rutgers was one of General George Washington's most trusted members of the American Army. So, you know, the reason we call it Rutgers University is because of the bravery of American troops, but more so the leadership of Colonel Henry Rutgers in defeating the British at the Battle of the Raritan back during the American Revolution. So it's crazy to me that the cancel culture is trying to change everything. And I'm just glad that the president, the new president, the first African-American president in the history of Rutgers University said, you know what, we're not going to rename Rutgers. We're going to keep the name. And I'm like, good, you know, score one for the good guys, score one for common sense, where it seems like, you know, social justice and the woke crowd are trying to just, I don't know, cancel everything. And it's exhausting. But we'll get to that later, Fred. I definitely want to pick your brain today because obviously I love your columns. And I wanted to get your thoughts on, you know, the governor certainly has, you know, early on during COVID, I'll give him his credit, did a good job in helping to flatten the curve in some of the actions he took via executive order to keep people inside, to make sure that, you know, we don't continue to have more fatalities like New York that seem to have worked. New Jersey really, really dipped in terms of COVID positive cases. But it seems though, Fred, that in recent weeks, the governor's come under a lot of scrutiny because now New Jerseyans want the state to reopen at a faster rate, whether it's gym owners that are taking the governor to task publicly, whether it's small business owners. It just seems like now the governor, whatever goodwill the governor may have had in the eyes of New Jerseyans, I think it's disappearing.
Well, I don't know. I think he still has that goodwill because his poll numbers still remain pretty good, and at least in the recent polls. And, you know, I can understand what people are saying, that his argument is, and, you know, some may agree with it, some may not, that, yes, New Jersey is doing well. But I think the big thing you touched on was the big retreat, if you will, was indoor dining. That was also July 2nd. Which was like 4 weeks ago now, and he changed his mind. And I'm sure that was problematic because I know a lot of restaurant owners had made arrangements to basically implement it, and now they can't do that. But now I don't think his explanation is totally off the wall. He's pointing to what's happened in other states that have opened indoor dining. Viruses skyrocketed. And his point is, obviously, we don't want that to happen here. So we have to be extra careful. I don't know if that's totally wrong.
I'm with you, Fred. I'm with you. And I think that the idea, because we're such a densely populated state, the notion of what he's done to flatten the curve has worked. I'm going to give the governor his due. I'm not going to sit here and be intellectually dishonest and not say, hey, the governor's not done a good job. He has, I think. At the onset in March, I think he's done a good job since then. I think what's going on really now during the summer months, because, you know, it's already August on Saturday. And I think a lot of New Jerseyans, Fred, for example, I had State Senator Vin Gopal from the 11th Legislative District on this podcast a few weeks ago, and then I just had him on Monday night on my studio show with ISNNJ. And I think that, you know, even though he's a Democrat, and I don't want to politicize this, but it seems that a lot of municipalities, especially like in his district, in the 11th district, is down the Jersey Shore. And these are cities that, my goodness, need the summer months because of tourism and hospitality. Those economies and those cities are so dependent on tourism, and when they're not getting them. And I get it that the governor is trying to be judicious and careful, but I think that even with the proper protocols, a lot of businesses along the Jersey Shore are like, hey, we need indoor dining. If not, we're going to die. These businesses are never going to recover and may close permanently. I think that's where the rubber meets the road now, right? Because I think this is where the governor is starting to maybe clash with not just, you know, Republicans. There are a lot of Republicans that are clashing with the governor anyway, but there are even some Democrats in the legislature, I think, that are even starting to clash with him.
No, I'm not disagreeing with that at all. I'm not. But then again, the real question is, and this is the political question, is this Phil Murphy's fault or is this the fault of the virus?
And sure.
It's really interchangeable.
No, listen, you're absolutely right about that. And I think it's a question that we have to ponder. And certainly it's one to keep an eye on because, again, like I said, it's already August on Saturday. And, you know, indoor dining seems to be nowhere in our future. And I know that many New Jerseyans, I think, are – never mind the indoor dining aspect of it. But I think, you know, I think there are a lot of New Jerseyans, too, Fred, that want to earn. And I think they want to be able to get back to work somehow. Not to say that everyone's working in hospitality and nightlife, but I think a lot of New Jerseyans want to earn. We know that the additional $600 weekly federal supplement expires this week. And New Jerseyans, for example, are going to be back to earning unemployment at a much more reduced rate. And I think that is freaking a lot of people out right now.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
You know, and I would say that in the meantime, until the federal government and Congress can get their act together and decide on what the next stimulus package is, it seems like, you know, it kind of puts a lot of, It puts the governor under the microscope as to, well, what's Trenton going to do? Never mind the budget that's going to be due in October. I think a lot of people are looking to the governor and saying, well, I know you're waiting for federal money, but what can the state do? Like, can the state maybe buckle its pants and maybe tighten up a little bit and not spend in certain areas where it used to spend and maybe have that money go to New Jerseyans? Is that something you've heard as well, Fred?
Find me again. Maybe I didn't hear you for a minute.
No. What I was asking was, I mean, obviously, I know as the governor is waiting for federal money, you know, a lot of New Jerseyans, I think, are taking to social media asking, you know, can the governor maybe do something via Trenton? Can the legislature and the governor maybe come to an agreement about maybe buckling their pants a little bit here and maybe not spending like they have and maybe allocating some money to help New Jerseyans? I mean, I think that's also been in the headlines as well. I think people are really frustrated, not just with Washington, but people are frustrated with Trenton.
Oh, absolutely. But I mean, it's kind of limited what New Jersey could do, right? Look, what are the main two revenues for state government? It's the income tax, sales tax, right? Mm-hmm. And obviously the income tax and the sales tax has really taken a hit because if people are unemployed, they're not making as much money and people are not shopping as much. So I don't know if New Jersey has money to do what you said. Now, of course, there's always you could look for things. I know I really think they need federal help. Now, the other thing, which is also controversial, which I'm sure we should get to, is the state's interest to borrow money, as you know. You know, that's
yeah.
Really interesting to watch and see how that turns out. You know, Republicans have gone to court. And, you know, Republicans are right. I mean, if you just look at I think the law or the Constitution is pretty well documented. If you want to borrow money like that, you have to send it to the voters, and that wasn't done here. So I would imagine the state will argue that, yes, we have to do that, but in an emergency, all bets are off. Now, I don't know how far you get with that argument, but we'll see what happens.
No, certainly, yeah, you're right, and it will be very interesting to see, you know, once it goes to court, how, you know, that case will turn out, and certainly there are even some Democrats. Again, I interviewed State Senator Vin Gopal this week on my show, and he, you know, he's one of those Democrats in the legislature that was opposed to the borrowing, and I think that that's going to create a divide along party lines. I think that, you know, the governor might not. Yeah, the governor might have to sort of put on the brakes a little bit and just think that every Democrat in the legislature is just going to go along with him and State Senate President Sweeney and Assembly Speaker Coughlin. Do you hear some of the same dissension?
Well, you know, there has been dissension for a long time. I mean, the pandemic kind of brought people together. But remember the battles at the beginning of Murphy's term over the millionaire's tax, which obviously never happened, and also legalizing marijuana, which never happened, and they took the easy way out. When I say easy way out, instead of making a decision themselves to putting it to the voters. So, and you know, but all that kind of subsided when the pandemic kicked in. But you're right; I'm sure that tension is still there.
Oh, it certainly is. And again, it'll be very interesting to see what goes on when it comes to this court case. I mean, obviously, I know that Jack Cittarelli
has been a name in the news. He's a guy that's really been out there. I know Jay Weber is another individual. You know, Assemblyman Jay Weber has also been a guy that has been leading the charge on this, and it'll be very interesting. And we'll get back to that in a little bit, because I really want to sort of get to the crux of what, you know, the dollar amounts we're talking about here when it comes to the borrowing. But I really wanted to highlight some of your recent columns, I mean, which are always exceptional, Fred. And one that really caught my eye was the Knucklehead Hall of Fame. And I love that title, because it's really funny that, of course, the governor used that term during the springtime when it came to, you know, how he described people in New Jersey that, hey, listen, we want to be outside and not wear masks and gather in sort of, you know, large groups, that, you know, you're going to, it's not conducive to flattening the curve. And, you know, here in your column, I mean, we're talking about parties in Middletown. We're talking about other cases where lifeguards now, Jesus, are sparking cases down, you know, all the way south in Long Beach Island, as well as like Cape May. We just saw this week 15 members of the Rutgers University football team also contracted the virus because of a party on campus. It's really interesting, though, Fred, when we talk about the usage of the word knuckleheads, where I get it. You know, we've been inside since March. A lot of New Jerseyans are going stir crazy. I think that, you know, people want to be outside. And even if they practice social distancing, they wear their masks. At the end of the day, I think people want to be outside. And I think that the summer months, unfortunately, people say, you know what, I get it. I've been indoors since March, and the spring now, I want to get some sun. I need some vitamin D. I just need the beach or whatever. I think this is behavior that, as the governor would allude to, is kind of proving them right.
Yeah, and the thing is, I don't know how you stop it. You just said the truth. I mean, you know, I'm sure a lot of these are relatively young people. You mentioned the lifeguards. How old are lifeguards? Are they teenagers or in their early 20s?
Sure.
And even a Rutgers football team. And you know, I guess it's that thing we've talked about since the pandemic began. Generally speaking, young people, if they get the disease, it's not very serious. But then on the other side of the coin, they could spread it to their parents or their grandparents, and that's something to be concerned about. And also, I think there's a sense that people who follow the news like you do and I do, New Jersey is doing well. I mean, what are some of the key factors? The rate of positivity, like the number, the percentage of people who take the test who are turning positive is less than 10%, which is good. Then you talk to the transmission rate, which is, I guess, an algorithm. If one person has a disease, he or she will spread it to how many other people? And it's like less, it has been less than one, or maybe it's a little more than one there, but it used to be five. So, and, you know, things have opened up to a certain extent. I think maybe it's a tendency for people to believe, hey, the crisis has ended, so we could have a big party again. And I don't know how you police that. I mean, I guess maybe if it's a Rutgers football team, maybe the administration or the football coaches could have somehow policed that. But, you know, like coaches, I'm a sports fan, you're a sports fan too. Coaches are involved in a lot of things, but you can't expect them to be looking over the plays literally 24 hours a day. So,
absolutely.
I mean, I guess people have to try to police themselves. And
no, absolutely. And of course, and listen, there was also the risk, you know, I'm sorry, the discussion of the risk of there not being a season now for college football, right? A lot of programs in the country.
Still may not.
Exactly. I mean, not that I would lose sleep, because Rutgers football hasn't been very good for a while. I mean, I'm more of a Rutgers basketball fan.
Rich Shannon is back. Isn't he the savior?
I hope. Well, you know what? Let's hope so. But right now, Coach Graciano isn't keeping these players in line, so we're hoping to at least keep them healthy, for God's sake. We'll see what happens.
I mean,
but,
think about money. How much did he get? Like $24 million for 6 years, something like that?
I believe Graciano, even back during his first tenure as coach at Rutgers University, I think he was still the highest paid state employee, and he probably still is, which is kind of crazy, you know, to say the very least. But, Fred, you know, aside from this, obviously, you know, a great article. You know, another one that caught my eye this week, and it was, you know, one that I have to say, you know, really I think embodies a lot of the divide that exists when it comes to whether or not we should be wearing masks And oftentimes it may come down along party lines. I know you highlighted in a recent column this week, State Assemblyman Hal Wirtz. He's a Republican from Sussex County. And he said that, you know, it's funny you mentioned in your article that the name of his home county comes from Sussex, England. And then, of course, you know, came the punchline, I never thought I'd be living under a king. So, of course,
well,
that just
happened today.
Yeah. No, listen, again, it's great work by you. And again, as I said, you know, I wanted to make sure I highlighted that today when I had you on the program. So,
an interesting thing. Let me explain a bit. I mean, a lot of people are accustomed to going to black political events. The pandemic began. The events just dried up. There are no many. There are no protests. Have been put.
Fred, I'm losing you for a little bit. Fred, I'm losing you a little
bit. How's this? Is this better?
Yeah. I wasn't sure if the phone was away from your mouth or anything. Yeah.
Yeah. How's this? Is this better?
Much better. Yeah. It's just you were dropping off a little bit. I don't know if you were just in a bad reception or didn't have the phone, but.
I mean, there haven't been any political events. I had the protests, and I've gone through a number of them. I've gone through the help kids in Morris County. We've got 4 or 5 Black Lives Matter protests. And I've gone through them. I've gone through a few like the ones today, and a lot of protests have happened.
Fred, I'm losing you there, Fred. Fred, okay. Your reception, I'm losing you. I don't know if you...
Is this
better? Still with me?
Is this better?
It's better now, yeah. It's better now.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm sitting I've gone to a lot of protests. And generally speaking, the protests on the left, just about everybody's wearing a mask. And the protests on the right, wearing masks. I think it's just a different way people look at things. It's a little tough thing to a certain extent, but like maybe for whatever reason, some Republicans are less, I guess, they're less trusting of what they're told by the government. I think that's part of it. And then, of course, I think if Donald Trump started wearing a mask 3 months ago in public, then maybe more Republicans would be wearing masks. But that simply did not happen. And
That's a fair observation. That's a fair observation, I think, that a lot of people, I think, have put out there that had the president maybe start wearing a mask earlier. You're right. I think maybe more and more Republicans or people in general, maybe that identify with the president, not necessarily Republicans per se, maybe would have been more amenable to wearing masks for some time and wouldn't have found it to be, like many have taken to social media, saying that it's inconvenience, it's bothersome, it's a nuisance. But it's been working for people, though, Fred, and I think that this is where we find a very delicate balance about, you know, should, you know, this being politicized the way it has been, but by the same token, like, just trying to be commonsensical and trying to make sure that we're practicing the best medicine we can, man.
No, absolutely, yeah. But like at the rally today, just nobody was wearing them except me and some of the other reporters.
Let me ask you this, though, Fred. And Fred, I'm kind of losing you a little bit there, so I don't know if you're just in a bad reception area or not just holding the phone, or you seem to be dropping off a little bit. You still with me here?
I'm still with you, yep.
Okay, good. Yeah, it just sounds like you were dropping off, and it just sounds like it's muffled a little bit. So I'm not sure if you're on a headset or you're holding the phone by your ear, but just, you know. But again, in the article that you published today, it seems that not just in the Assemblyman Wirtz, but a lot of New Jerseyans, not just legislators, but even a lot of New Jerseyans are taking to social media and really coming down on the governor. I know that this week also, in addition to State Senator Vin Gopal, I also interviewed Ian Smith. And Ian Smith has been in the news. He's the gym owner at Attila's Gym in Belmar, not to be confused with Belmar down in Monmouth County along the Jersey Shore, but down in South Jersey, like literally almost by Philadelphia. And Mr. Smith has been in the news cycle. He's one of many small business owners that has taken, again, to social media, calling, you know, the governor a king at times, saying that the governor is acting very much in the way that a fascist would, that he's oppressing small business. And I think that this is where, right now in late July, I think this is where we're at currently. You know, some people look at the governor as, hey, he's trying to do the best he can to keep this curve flat, to keep COVID cases and deaths to a minimum. And then there are people that are just like, hey, listen, we get it, but now you're infringing upon people's rights to earn and to run small businesses. And again, I don't know if you've been following that case with Ian Smith down in South Jersey, but he's not just the only one that's taking the governor to task.
No, he hasn't. No. Governor has a difficult time explaining as to why gyms still have to be closed. That's the difficulty here. I mean, I think that it would have been different if it was like 3 or 4 months ago, but now that the curve is flattened a bit, it's a little bit more difficult for the governor to explain why these gyms have to be closed. And I think that's what the problem is to a certain extent.
You're right about that.
Yeah, Murphy has made a few missteps. I mean, it was really bad when he was, remember back when he began marching in some of the Black Lives Matter protests. At the same time, he was trying to say gatherings were prohibited. I mean, and I don't know who gave him advice on that one. I mean, if you remember, he came out a few days afterward and saying that, okay, all protests are okay. But, I mean, that made it look rather foolish then. So he definitely made some missteps.
Without question. And I think it, whether it's Assemblyman Wirtz, or small business owners, or just people in general on social media. It seems like, you know, one thing, and I talked about this prior, whether it was this gym owner, whether it was the young lady who ran tennis center in Randolph, New
yep.
Jersey, you know, they were in the headlines recently. And something that I called the governor out on in June was, you know, for months he's been telling us to stay indoors. And, you know, it was working to flatten the curve. But then, you know, in mid to late June, when everybody and their mother was out on the street, right, during these protests after the George Floyd incident, which, again, I'm not trying to diminish the importance of raising awareness about systemic racism, institutional racism. But, you know, there's the governor on Sunday, on a Sunday in Hillside, marching with protesters under a Black Lives Matter banner. And then, of course, you know, people are like, wait a minute, you've been fining people, you've been sending police officers to disperse groups of like more than 10 people, but here you are on the outside marching with hundreds of people, no social distancing. And then the very next day, Fred, on Monday, he got slaughtered on social media, which, if you remember, on Tuesday, I think he felt the need to alleviate a little bit of the executive order, and that's why you saw the outdoor dining restrictions being lifted. And I think it was just like, wait a minute, you know, people are right to call out the governor. It's okay to be home because we can't be outside, but now people are protesting, you know, everywhere in New Jersey. And in some cases, protests were very disorderly, even downright violent. And there was no peep, there was no arrest, there was no fines. So I think that's where the governor got himself into a little bit of trouble.
Oh, he definitely did. And he did change his mind quickly enough, but it's, should not have happened in the first place.
Well, listen, I'm with you. And it kind of begs the question now, Fred, that moving forward, will the governor ease up a little bit when it comes to not just the gym owner, because, again, he just had him arrested on Monday. You know, obviously sending state police and local police departments, which, let's be honest, man, at the end of the day, they don't have any power there. I mean, if the governor's office and the attorney general sends a mandate, hey, you need to go arrest these people, these police officers are powerless. They have to go and serve an arrest warrant. And we saw that on Monday. We saw that on Monday morning at 5:10 in the morning. Subsequently, Ian and his partner, Frank Trombetti, were released, I think, at noon. You know, he made the talk show circuits. He was on my show during the afternoon. Then he went on Tucker Carlson and Sean Hannity at night. So, you know, he's in the headlines, but also the woman who owns the tennis center in Randolph, her fines almost exorbitant. Like the threat of a $2,000 fine seemed very punitive, Fred. That was also kicked down. It just seems like whether or not maybe people are going to test the governor when it comes to these mass gatherings and say, hey, listen, if it's not for one of these social justice causes that the governor, you know, is amenable to, maybe more and more people might say, you know what, let's see what happens to us. Do you foresee that sort of action?
Yeah, well, it's kind of happened already with the I mean, and that's why, remember that, I mean, that's why I think the governor changed his tune on the protest. And I think Jim Owen was a different case. I mean, honestly, he's been on the defining for a long time. So I'm sure the state wants to crack down on him. Don't you think a part of the problem here is that gyms are still officially closed? So if one guy is open, quote unquote, illegally, it kind of hurts the business of all the other gyms who are following the law. So you kind of have to keep that in mind, too.
No, I hear you. I hear you. And I think it's that slippery slope. I think that people are concerned about. And I think it's something to certainly keep an eye on because, as we know, it's not going to end anytime soon, obviously. We're seeing that COVID is altering everything around us. I mean, listen, I'm a big baseball fan. Baseball just came back last week. And now we're seeing players from certain teams down south testing positive. We're like, I'm terrified that what little baseball we have will be canceled. Thankfully, that's not the case right now, but it's altered everything. It's altered the way we look at sports. It's altered our public schools, and we'll get to that a little bit later. But it's also altered, I think, the way that we look at even how we were voting this month, right? Obviously, primary day for the first time was a vote by mail only. We saw, you know, a lot of incumbents, Fred, come out on top, especially in congressional races. We saw incumbent, you know, the junior United States Senator Cory Booker winning by a pretty convincing margin. Listen, COVID has just affected everything possible that we can think
of. Yeah,
but
right? let's back up, though. Incumbents always come out on top, generally speaking. Right? But then again, there were some, you know, there were some interesting congressional races. I don't know how much you get into this, but
sure.
Republican race in District 3 where David Richter won, and he's going up against Andy Kim, and that's
Huffrey.
A good one. And then further south where Amy Kennedy won, and she's going up against Jeff Van Drew. I think that's kind of an interesting one to watch, especially since Jeff Van Drew got elected as a Dem, and now he's a Republican. So there's... But, you know, the thing is, the turnout of the primary was pretty good, wasn't it?
I think, again, well, all I can say, at least up here by where I live, I saw some numbers that were in the 40 percentile. And the reason I say that is because I know up here in Hudson County, for example, I had the Democratic chair of Hudson County on my local podcast last night, and she wasn't really pleased with that turnout. And I was sort of.
Hey, was she pleased
surprised.
Or not pleased?
She was not pleased. She was hoping for a better turnout, despite the fact it was vote by mail. She was hoping for a better turnout, which I was like, okay, well, that may not always be the case when it comes to voting by mail.
40% is not bad for a primary.
I agree with you. Now, again, how, you know, what numbers each county. You know, party chair is anticipating. I mean, that may be subjective. I mean, we don't know exactly what Hudson's view was as opposed to Bergen, to Somerset, to Cape May County, of course. But you bring up the congressional races that'll be definitely ones to watch. I mean, I think up here in North Jersey, Fred, there are ones that are very predictable that don't seem competitive. Although I know up here where I live in the 8th congressional district, Albio Cires won by 40 points. He'll easily win in November. You know, Hudson County in the 8th congressional district remains solidly blue. But to your point, I mean, there are some races down south that look really, really interesting. And the ones you just mentioned, which do you think is more plausible for an upset? Do you think you think Jeff Van Drew is ripe to be picked off, or do you think someone like Andy Kim could be picked off?
Well, both of those could happen, but I don't know if you would consider any of them an upset. Let's look at Andy Kim. I mean, it's not as if he's been there for 20 years. He won one. He's been there for 2 years.
Yeah.
And it's always been more or less a Republican district. So in a sense, sometimes you notice in politics, someone wins an upset and only lasts for one election cycle. But then again, you know, I think here's the problem for Republicans. I think Donald Trump is very unpopular in New Jersey, and I think that's going to hurt Republicans running for Congress, even in districts that may not be that left-wing. That's how I look at things now. I think he loses the independent vote, and that turns a lot of elections.
You're right about that. Listen, there's 95 days to go. A lot can happen between now and November 3rd. But here in New Jersey, see, it's interesting, though, because there are pockets of that the president is very popular in, but they're not pockets that have enough people to maybe sway districts. I mean, yeah, he's popular on the Jersey Shore. He's popular in a lot of South Jersey. But in Central and North Jersey, much more urban areas, much more solidly blue areas, not purple, the president, isn't popular. Or if he is, it seems like maybe a lot of people aren't openly, vocal about it. But when it comes to these races in New Jersey, I think you're right. I think it's going to put Republicans in a very precarious position. But I have to ask you, because even the Richter win, that was a really tough, and I think at times very ugly type of primary.
Oh, absolutely.
It was ugly. It was chippy. It was feisty. I think it downright turned a little very – listen, and I'm a big WWE fan. I love pro wrestling. So I love the theater and all the bombastic and all the craziness. It was getting to that point where it was getting a little ugly there. It was almost turning a little WWE for Richter and his opponent. And, what do you think of that race?
Well, for me, it was very fun to watch. I'm sure Andy Kim liked watching it too. Look,
David
Richter is a guy who doesn't really live in the district. I mean, he was, his story, some people might know it. He's wealthy, and he wanted to run in District 2 against Jeff Van Drew. Jeff Van Drew was a Democrat then. I think he bought a house in Avalon with plans to do that. His house had been in Lawrenceville, which is in Mercer County. But then Jeff Van Drew became a Republican, and Richter did not want to. So then he figured he set his sights on Andy Kim in District 3. And I think he's bought a house somewhere in District 3, Island Heights. I don't know if that's in Ocean County, but the thing is, it's nice to be able to just buy a house wherever you want to buy a house.
Sure.
But, that's certainly a drawback for running in the general election. But we know Kate Gibbs had a lot of criminal problems. I mean, look, there are a lot of things that, I think she had an arrest record, which included a number of things, like maybe drinking underage or maybe some small amount of marijuana possession. So you could say, okay, that's really not a big deal for someone 21 years old. But I think more damaging, she was also convicted or arrested for shoplifting. And shoplifting may be a little bit. Shoplifting, I mean, let's be honest, most people probably had a drink when they were 20 years old. I mean, that's just reality. But most people got shoplifted. So that's another situation. So, but that was a nasty race, and David Richter survived. Yeah. Now, and Van Drew is very interesting too. I mean, Van Drew's been elected there, but he's never been elected as a Republican, which is going to be interesting to see. And
Fred, I'm sorry to cut you off, but you know what? Even what was interesting about that race was that Kennedy won off the line. You know, I mean, she kind of trumped Norcross and the Norcross money that was being pumped into that race. And I think that was something to keep an eye on, right?
Yeah, let's face it. The name Kennedy still has some magic among Democrats.
Yeah.
Has magic among, in the general election remains to be seen. But
absolutely.
Yeah, so.
Absolutely. And I think, come between now and November, we're going to find out. I mean, listen, back in January, pre-COVID, when the president came to Wildwood to endorse Jeff Van Drew.
That
turnout was crazy. I mean, I remember we spoke about it, I think, earlier in the year. It was crazy. And I'm like, wow. Now, again, because of what's going on with COVID and what's going on with the amount of – with what's allowed in terms of mass gatherings, I'm not sure the governor would be too thrilled if the president decided to come to New Jersey, once again to South Jersey, and say, oh, listen, you know, I'm going to have another rally. I think the governor will probably have a tantrum, you know. And listen, I think for a lot of people, they would say rightfully so, the last thing they want to see is people crammed into the Wildwood Convention Center again, or camping out outside like people did. I mean, if you remember back in January, there were people camping out since the night before. It was insane.
Yeah. But then again, let's be honest. There's no reason for Trump to have a rally in New Jersey. It's not as if New Jersey is a competitive state. So
yeah, no,
reason.
Absolutely.
There's no reason
to waste
your time here. So that's not going to happen.
No, absolutely. And I think, you know, I think in early January, I think the president just saw it as a good opportunity to give Jeff Andrews some FaceTime.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah,
absolutely. And it's funny because, again, I think in parts of the state, the president's popular, but not enough. You know, I was talking about this with other guests in recent episodes where, you know, New Jersey and its 14 electoral votes have been very safe for Democrats since 1992. I mean, the last time a Republican won New Jersey in a general election for the presidency was George H.W. Bush in 1988. Mm-hmm. So since Bill Clinton in 1992, New Jersey has solidly been blue. Those 14 electoral votes are never – like New Jersey's never a swing state. It's never going to be one, I think, for the foreseeable future. It's about, hey, again, this was in January pre-COVID. Hey, you know, maybe the president wants to come to New Jersey in the summer to MetLife Stadium. I'll be honest with you, pre-COVID, Fred, I would argue that, you know, if the president wanted to come to MetLife, he probably would have gotten a good turnout. He might not sell out the stadium, you know, but he probably would have gotten a really good turnout. I mean, because God knows the Giants and Jets can't sell out MetLife, so maybe the president would have done it. I don't know. You know, it's possible pre-COVID. But, you know, certainly I think it's something that, you know, we'll never know because of what's going on with COVID-19. Fred, let me ask you, because I know that it's been talked about in New Jersey, you know, in recent months. We know that, you know, it's still 95 days, I believe, and counting until Election Day. As I just alluded to, New Jersey's, you know, a solid blue state. But I just don't see all this enthusiasm anywhere in New Jersey for Joe Biden. And I get it. He's up in polls. I don't believe polls. I didn't believe them 4 years ago. I'm not going to believe them now. I got to see it to believe it. But I just don't see this enthusiasm. I get it. COVID has affected people's way of campaigning. There's no rallies. You know, again, even pre-COVID, I didn't see people with Joe Biden signs anywhere. I don't see people driving around right now with Joe Biden bumper stickers. I just don't see this enthusiasm that the liberal media is trying to shove down our throats.
Neither do I, but here's the question. Let me ask the question in a reverse way. It's okay. Is there enthusiasm for Joe Biden? I don't know, but is there enthusiasm among Dems and people who think like Democrats to vote against Donald Trump? I think it may be, you know, right? If an incumbent president is running again and you vote against him, he's kind of the issue, right? You're either voting in favor of him or voting against him. Well, my advantage in life in doing the job that I do, I get to go to Republican things and Democratic things. So I kind of see how both sides are thinking. At least I used to do that before the pandemic. And
sure.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, a lot of people, well, Bernie Sanders people, and Joe's kind of an establishment figure, and he's also prone to saying some really off-the-wall or silly stuff. So that could make him a troubling candidate to a certain extent. His age as well, even though he and Donald Trump are the same age. That kind of just about, so that kind of balances off. Yeah, there may not be that many exciting to him, but I think excited to quote-unquote get rid of Donald Trump, and I think that may drive him to the polls. In other words, what I'm saying is that the idea someone could be excited, instead of saying, I really want to vote for Joe Biden, they may say, I really want to get rid of Donald Trump. The bottom line is the same. A vote is a vote.
That, you know what? That's right. That's fair. And I think that it's more about, as you said, many Democrats or even some independents may not be thrilled with Joe Biden. And why would you? I mean, this is a guy who is going to, you know, give you a gas every now and then, if not consistently. I know the president will too. The president certainly has his faults and his defects politically. There's no question. But what really concerns me, Fred, I wanted to pick your brain about this because I think it's, you know, Saturday is August 1st. It's my understanding, and maybe he'll wait until Monday, but it's my understanding within the next 4 to 5 days, Joe Biden will pick a running mate. And, you know, listen, the pool is not really great. I mean, we're talking about slim pickings here. I mean, you know, Joe Biden has gone publicly and said that he's picking a woman of color. So he's already boxed himself into a corner. You know, he can't escape that now. Maybe if he wanted to pick Elizabeth Warren or someone like Amy Klobuchar, I mean, that's gone out the window. Like that, unless he wants vitriol or backlash, like he can't do that. I mean, he's already put himself in a corner by saying he's picking a woman and a woman of color. I'll tell you right now, I'm looking at this pool of candidates, whether it's, you know, former gubernatorial candidate Stacey Abrams, who's a very far-left radical, or even Kamala Harris, a U.S. senator out of California. Again, and this is what I tell people, you know, there's rumors that maybe Joe Biden, even if he wins, he may not finish the term. He may not be of his best mental capacity. I don't know about you, but if he's picking from what I'm hearing and what I'm reading, that he's most likely going to pick Kamala Harris, Fred, I'm not saying you, I mean this generically to our audience. It should scare the living daylights out of you that if Kamala Harris is the vice presidential nominee, she is within a heartbeat of the presidency. I'm sorry. That should scare the you-know-what out of you when it comes election time. You know, what are your thoughts about that sort of strategy?
I don't know. I mean, I don't know why. But I mean, no, she's a background. She's been a senator. She's been a prosecutor. I think, I don't know, you may disagree with her politically. I don't think she's a scary figure. I think she'd be better than Stacey Abrams. So, I mean, whether you think Stacey Abrams,
agreed.
Whether you think that Stacey is too far left, I mean, I think a bigger drawback for her is what has she won? I mean, she's been a state legislator, right?
Yep.
Yeah, I mean, so, I mean, obviously, I mean, that's, I mean, like, I mean, obviously, it's easy for Democrats to get elected in California, but Harris had to at least get through the primary and get elected in the state with 35, 40 million people or something like that. I mean, Abrams hasn't. It's like a state senator from New Jersey running for vice president. That doesn't make much sense. And you also have Susan Rice's name, who was national security advisor. So I don't know. I don't know. That could cut both ways. She's never run for elected office, which could be a bad thing, but also could be a good thing.
I hear you, Fred. Again, my concern just about Kamala Harris is that she's someone who, listen, even during the primary, she never got one single vote. And I know that she was maybe one of, not the first person to pull out because her funds ran out.
I mean, not one delegate, yeah.
Yeah, and it's just like, oh my God. And also too, I think, you know, and I harp about this a lot on this show, but you know, the liberal media never taken Joe Biden to task on some of his really shady past when it comes to his years in the Senate, you know, co-authoring the crime bill in '94. You know, it's interesting when I hear Democrats like Joe Biden and members of the Democratic Party talk about systemic racism or institutional racism in our criminal justice system, when some of the people at the top of the party have been complicit in putting people of color in jail. I mean, look at Joe Biden's record. And as a senator, I mean, when he co-authored the crime bill, I mean, that made it very punitive for people of color in our criminal justice system. And when people do their homework about Kamala Harris, as Attorney General, I mean, she put an enormous amount of people of color in prison in California, and the liberal media never takes her to task on it. It's almost like
Hold on. Let's listen it around. I mean, that's the job of a prosecutor to put people in jail, right? I mean, assuming they're guilty. I mean, that's kind of what you do, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's a negative.
Well, I would just argue that it just seemed that there are reports and there is literature out there to suggest she was overly punitive in her time as Attorney General. So for her to then turn around and say, well, I'm someone that, you know, oh, I was a law and order person when I was Attorney General, but now it's like, well, now I want to cry systemic racism. It just seems that people pick up on that, Fred, and I think that's where she might get herself in trouble from a PR perspective. I just want to get your thoughts.
I don't think that Democrat is going to vote, if it's Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, is going to vote for the Donald Trump ticket because he or she doesn't like what Kamala Harris did as a prosecutor in California. I don't think one affects the other.
That's fair. Okay, that's fair.
If anything, I mean, Mr. Trump is running, will probably be running on a law and order platform. I mean, you can see what's going on. And so maybe the Dems having a candidate who has sort of a quote-unquote pro-law and order background to a certain extent might benefit them.
That's fair. You know what? That's a really good observation. That's a really good observation. Fred, getting back to Jersey politics for a second here, we know that coming up in November, aside from everything on the ballot, you know, we know that, to the best of our knowledge, we'll still be voting in person. I think a lot of New Jerseyans, I think people around the country in general, I think there's a lot of there's a good portion of the electorate that's concerned about making sure we can still do that. And here in New Jersey, there seems to be the mantra of like, well, if, you know, if motor vehicle reopened and people are staying on lines to renew their license or take their written test or renew their registrations, whatever, and people are practicing responsible social distancing, they're wearing their masks. I know some people might say it's apples to oranges, but some people are like, hey, if you can stand online at your motor vehicle, guess what? You can stand online to vote. So the idea of trying to push a vote by mail for November doesn't fly with a lot of people. What are you hearing?
So far, I've heard nothing. I know I watch the governor's briefings, and every time he's asked about it, he says he hasn't made a decision yet. You know, I'm an old-fashioned guy in the sense I like going to the polls and voting. So
yes,
same here. I hope that we do have regular voting, if you will. But, I mean, I don't know if we're going to, though. I think you had made another – yeah, so I think – yeah, I'm not really hearing anything yet. I don't know. I don't think we know what we're going to do yet. I hope we have regular voting, though.
I agree with you. I certainly do. I agree with you completely on this. Again, getting back to November, one of the things aside from voting for president, voting for a U.S. Senate seat, voting in all the congressional districts, and, of course, you know, local races, local issues, you know, on the ballot is the marijuana referendum. And I know this is an issue that's near and dear to Governor Murphy. I know that the legislature, since Governor Murphy took office in January 2018, have never gotten on the same page. We saw a vote in March of 2019 that didn't produce enough votes in either chamber. And it seemed like, you know, Senate President Sweeney said, you know what, we could put this on the ballot, but not in November 2019, where, let's be honest, turnout was not going to be very high because assembly seats were at the top of the ballot. Steve Sweeney felt, hey, you know, let's push it back to November 2020. In the meantime, we're still arresting people for marijuana unjustly. And it seems like, according to most polls, it will pass. New Jerseyans will vote to legalize it. I'm just concerned, though, Fred, that, you know, even with everything with COVID and the fact, you know, the budget got pushed back to October, who knows how much the governor and the legislature will agree on that. But it just seems that even if it passes in November, you know, it's not like it's something that's going to get done in 30 days. It's not like, if you remember back in 2018, the governor and the legislature scrambled to just get like their minimum wage, right? After a full calendar year, they scrambled during the lame duck to get the minimum wage increased over a 5-year period. I don't think what's going to go on with marijuana can be that cut and dry, can be done so quickly. And then we're talking about 2021, and guess what? It seems like priorities for people are, you know, every state senate seat's up for grabs, every assembly seat's up for grabs, the governor's running for re-election. It might seem like, hey, campaigning might take precedent over really sitting down and ironing out the details about marijuana in New Jersey. That's the fear that I have.
Yes, but I mean, if it passes, at least it passes, and then at least you can iron out the details as opposed to looking for votes to pass it. I mean, unless the polls are completely wrong, I'm pretty sure it's going to pass. And, you know, I thought that the Democrats have said that Democrats in the legislature, you know, sometimes this might surprise you. Sometimes politicians don't have a lot of guts.
They're afraid
to pass it. Just like, you know, a number of years ago, even though it's Democrats, and like marijuana, you know, thing or liberal initiative, they were passed like gay marriage or marriage equality, and it had to be done by the courts. I think sometimes the same thing is happening here. I think that they may, but I mean, they kind of punted it to the people. Well, now, granted, and just, we could also argue that, well, you know, maybe it's good to let the majority, let the people decide this issue. But I mean, you know, that when they punted it, it was a year and a half ago. Now it's coming up pretty quick. There could be one interesting thing. I don't know how much of the campaign is going to be about it because it may get lost in the shuffle of the presidential election.
You're right about that. And I think it's going to be one of many things to watch out for come November, Fred, because as we all know, it's going to be a pretty crowded ballot, to say the least. There's a lot to vote on come November, not just a referendum on marijuana, but, you know, we got local races too. We got local municipalities. We got other ballot initiatives in towns and cities. It's something to keep an eye out for sure.
Yes, Fred, absolutely.
Before I let you go,
yeah.
Fred, before I let you go, I mean, you're always a wonderful guest on this show. I feel like I have you on for like an hour and it's still not, for 2 hours, 3 hours, and still not get through everything because you're such a wealth of information. Before I let you go, anything to keep an eye on? I mean, not to give spoilers out for your next columns, but anything that our audience should keep an eye out as we approach August?
Well, no, nothing immediately on tap. I mean, I'm going to, you know, keep abreast of the congressional races. Oh, if you have a few senators, another, and I shouldn't say crazy incident. A few weeks ago, it was a young black from a tree in Morristown.
I was not aware of that. You're kind of breaking up, Fred, a little bit. Just real quick, if you just repeat what you just said.
A young black man found hanging from a tree in Morristown a few weeks ago.
Wow. I was not aware of that.
It was 20 years old, Lewis Morris Park, and the authorities quickly, in a negative way, they ruled it a suicide. But in the of the times, now we know that in terms of quote unquote traditional lynching, black men found hanging from trees, that's sort of how it was done. And the Black Lives Matter group is asking the state attorney general's office to look to sort of reinvestigate the investigation that deemed it a suicide. And basically, you ask what I might be checking on going. Yeah, that's certainly something I'm going to keep abreast of.
Well, you know what, Fred? And that's why you are an exceptional journalist, because you're on top of these things. And that's why we rely on you for your excellent columns and your insight and what you bring to New Jersey journalism. So, Fred, I want to thank you for your
time. Thank you so
much.
And getting back to how we began, I'm going to make sure I always use proper grammar.
Well, listen, I'm glad you always do. And listen, it's definitely something if you want to Google and look into it.
Okay.
It's a really alarming story. I don't know if it's something you want to write about.
I'll look into it right now.
Okay. Yeah, it's very disappointing because, again, you know, Rutgers is the State University of New Jersey, and when you're seeing this sort of policy making, you know, by academics, it's alarming. And again, not because I want to politicize it, but It reminds me why, first of all, I work in academia, so it just annoys me about my liberal colleagues and how just asinine they can be. But it's just something, it does a disservice to parents and our kids, Fred. So, again, I'm not sure if it's something you want to look into, but I want to thank you for your time, man. You're always treat here, and I hope you enjoy your time here on Politically Direct.
Yeah, thanks a lot. Be good. Thanks for having me.
You too. You too, Fred. Take care.
Bye.
All right, folks. Great interview today here with Fred Snowflax. He is one of our outstanding columnists at Insider NJ. And certainly, you know, he's back to work, working on columns as we speak here. So great stuff there by Fred Snowflax. And certainly, if you don't read him enough, I would suggest you do. Some great, great articles this week he's published, not just only with the issue I mentioned today, it was just published this afternoon with Assemblyman Hal Wirtz from Sussex County. Also, I know you had a great column a couple of days ago concerning Frank Pelota, who is the Republican candidate in the 5th Congressional District, lashing out against Democrats. And certainly, I think you want to read up on those and everything else that's published by Fred Snowflake via Insider NJ. Well, folks, listen, that's our episode for this week. Again, if you missed any part of it, you can always listen to it in its entirety as well as all my other episodes by going to www.insidernj.com/podcast. Again, it's www.insidernj.com/podcast. That's plural with an S. And you can listen to not just only today's episode with Fred Snowflack, my teammate at Insider on Jay, but other recent guests I've had all throughout 2020. Now, folks, if you have any topic or suggestion you want to hear about for the coming weeks, write to me, politicallydirectnj@yahoo.com. Don't forget to follow the show on Instagram at politicallydirectnj. You can also follow me on Instagram as well at Professor Fernando Uribe. Also, hit me up on Twitter at Professor F. Uribe. And don't forget to like Politically Direct on Facebook as well. And lastly, ladies and gentlemen, check out Insider NJ by going to their website, www.insidernj.com. Coverage of the political scene anywhere in the state of New Jersey. Folks, no one does it better than Insider NJ. Once you go on the website and click on the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Go on there, folks. Double-click on that with your mouse or on your keypad, and you're automatically enrolled in the morning intelligence briefing. So when you're watching the cable news shows in the morning, maybe watching sports, whatever, having a cup of coffee, maybe working out, walking your dog, guess what? Chances are you're probably on your smartphone and you're going through your email, and in your inbox, it'll be right there waiting for you. So definitely check it out, folks. It starts off with our editor-in-chief, Max Pizarro, and certainly works its way down to, again, today's guest, the outstanding journalist, Fred Snowflack, Jay Lassiter, of course, Alan Steinberg, who drives me crazy sometimes, but he's a great writer as well, and all the other outstanding columnists brought to you by Insider NJ. Folks, don't forget to like them on Facebook and also follow them on Twitter. And never forget to start and end your day with Insider NJ. Folks, that's our show for this week. Again, great episode with Insider NJ columnist Fred Snowflack. Definitely tune in. Let me know what you think about it. Please be careful this weekend, folks. Again, it's the end of the month. If you're driving, please be careful. We all know speed traps are always up and about in our municipalities, especially down the shore. We know how cops can be down in all these municipalities down the Jersey Shore. So please be responsible if you're going to be outside with outdoor dining. I know that obviously you can't go to bars because there's no indoor bars available, but if you're going to be drinking outside, please wear your mask. Please practice responsible social distancing and stay safe. Again, as we're trying to defeat COVID-19 in 2020 once and for all. So, folks, I'll see you next week here on Blog Talk Radio. And don't forget, let's keep on talking.